How has pop American Christianity replaced the Holy Trinity with the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Has American Christianity Failed? It's written by regular guest Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Has American Christianity Failed? Is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Has American Christianity Failed? I don't know about you, but I find it rather frustrating when a story that ought to be really a big story raises more questions than it answers in the news, or leaves unanswered as many questions as this one did. From the Religion News Service, U.S. Lutherans approved document recognizing agreement with the Catholic Church. It's a very thin story, doesn't have a lot to say. It's mostly, well, almost half of it are links to various documents, which is certainly helpful. But in six short paragraphs, it doesn't tell us a lot about what the headline promises to give us. Of course, it ought to be a big story, and it does raise a question. As big as the story may be, why do Protestant liberal denominations, the mainline Protestantism that we always talk about, why does it get such a massive amount of media coverage disproportionate with these denominations' size and influence? Joining us to answer those questions and to talk about a recent ecumenical agreement between the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and Roman Catholic leaders, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I did not get the memo on this. I just read about it in the Religion News Service. How does that happen?
You didn't have like a Catholic priest show up at your church the next week and like help lead the service or something?
No, definitely not.
Well, that's really shocking. What's really shocking about this story is that it actually seems, at first glance, to be pretty important, yet it hardly got any coverage at all, you know, which to me, this is one of those cases where this is the dog that didn't bark, you know, in that sense. You know, the famous old story about the lighthouse keeper who, you know, through the years, the cannon next to his bed would go off once an hour to alert ships, you know, that not to hit the rocks and all that. And through the years, he developed a complete rock-solid ability to sleep through that cannon going off. And then after years, there was the inevitable moment where he forgot to put in enough shells. So, in the middle of the night at like 2 a.m. or something, the gun didn't go off, and he jumped out of bed and shouted, "What was that?" Well, that's kind of what this story is like to me, in the sense that, you know, when you look at the headline, major U.S. Lutheran group signs this agreement that says, I mean, the key phrase here, I mean, our listeners, if they haven't seen the story, and the odds are they haven't, since it was this tiny little story that didn't get a whole lot of attention, the lead literally says that the, you know, this U.S. Catholic group, which usually is like the ecumenical branch of the U.S. Catholic bishops or something, a lot of academics for the most part, in their talks with the ELCA, the two groups had concluded there are, and this is a direct quote, there are no longer church-dividing issues, unquote, on many points with the Roman Catholic Church. Well, the word many, of course, is the hole in that phrase to which you can drive, you know, a truck. But still, this sounds really important, which, you know, and like it should have got a lot of attention, but it didn't. So I got interested in this story, and so did a Catholic journalist who frequently sends private notes to me at Get Religion. And he said, you know, he thought this was like The Onion or something like this. This was some sort of satire. He said, where are the three stacked column headlines on this thing? Where's the big letters? This is big religion news, or there must be an interesting reason that it isn't big religion news. And so that's why I got intrigued with it, which was, why didn't everybody make a big deal out of this?
Let's talk about it. I want to come back to the fact that there are hundreds of questions that could be asked about this, even as sparse as the story is and as, you know, the dog that didn't bark as the story is. Why is it that mainline Protestantism, as you say, the Seven Sisters, generally get a amount of media coverage that is way out of proportion with both their size and, in a lot of ways, their influence?
I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One is that when the religion beat, especially at the wire services, really emerged in the 50s and 60s, the mainline Protestant churches really were making a lot of news. And we called them the mainline for a reason. That's a reference to the Philadelphia mainline train, and that's kind of a symbol for American prestige and money and kind of well-grounded establishment clout. And that's, you know, that's who these churches are. And once again, it kind of, you can talk about mainline all you want, but it helps to actually, you know who those churches are. Sociologists have normally defined the Seven Sisters as the United Methodist Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the Episcopal Church, the United Church of Christ, the Presbyterian Church USA, the American Baptist Church, and the Disciples of Christ. Now, the minute you hear that list, if you've been following trends in American religion, you know that included in that list are some of the fastest shrinking churches in the United States, primarily the United Church of Christ, the Disciples of Christ, and there has been all kinds of membership loss in the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterian Church USA, kind of post-heyday in the 60s. So these churches that used to be at the center of American life are now actually kind of peripheral to it. Yet, here's the heart of your question. They're on the periphery, but why do they still get so much coverage? And I've been intrigued with this all the way back into the 80s, and I wrote an article once called Why Journalists Love the Episcopal Church. And it doesn't capture all of the Seven Sisters, but it does hint at some of them. And I mean, it's just, I don't want to read the whole article to people, but the point is that the mainline churches tend to approach the world of religion the way a lot of journalists, or even most journalists, might want it to be approached, and that would be they approach it as politics. When you go to a gathering of liberal mainline Protestants, for the most part, they're going to be talking about the subjects that matter the most to them, and that's, you know, things like war, peace, gender, the environment, racial issues, arguing about homosexuality. And you would have to say that with a very few exceptions, the pendulum has been swinging in the direction of liberal, cultural, and doctrinal trends for at least four decades here, 40 years. Well, to journalists, that's really good news. I mean, you've got a bunch of people that kind of look at the world the way journalists do, and their theological opinions are kind of the way that journalists would want them to be. Does that make sense? They're on the here's the big phrase. They're on the right side of history.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, this is the way history is supposed to go. The Lutheran church historian Martin Marty has noted for years that sociologists have had this view of religion that things are just supposed to get better and better and better, and the world will get more and more secular and more tolerant. But for 50 years, Marty has been noting the only problem is that isn't what's happening in the world. In fact, for the most part, the kind of hyper-liberal, hyper-inclusive religious bodies continue to shrink. And while secularism may be on the rise, and we have the rise of the religiously unaffiliated and whatever else, in the world of religion, the groups that are thriving or at least breaking even tend to be the more doctrinally conservative groups with higher birth rates that are doing unseemly, intolerant things like evangelism, you know, and stuff like that, and actually going out and trying to make converts. And wherever you find converts and you find babies, you tend to find a more conservative approach to faith. So that's obviously not news, is it? But war, peace, race, environment, gender, the morality of styrofoam cups, you know, these crucial life and death issues that tend to get debated at a mainline church convention, they make headlines. So all of that is to say, once again, why didn't this story make bigger headlines? And I have to admit, I'm somewhat baffled by it. This is the sort of thing that, when I was breaking into religion writing, this was the sort of story that ended up just automatically in the top 10 religion stories of the year. This was big, important people saying they've reached big, important conclusions. And one other factor for why some of this happens. Imagine you're a photographer for the Associated Press, and you go to a convention of Southern Baptists, and a bunch of Southern Baptists reach some really important conclusion, and your job is to come back with a photograph that both looks religious and looks important. Now, when you go to hang out with a bunch of Southern Baptists, and to a lesser extent, Missouri Synod Lutherans, although you guys, a lot of your folks wear collars and black, would kind of show my deck of cards here. If you go to take a picture of a bunch of Southern Baptists, they just basically look like normal people in suits and ties and dresses and maybe the occasional polo shirt, right? They look normal. But if you go to a gathering of Roman Catholics and Lutherans, and it probably ends with like an ecumenical prayer service or something like that, and you've got two bishops standing up there with crow's ears, and they've got really big fancy hats, you know, and then there's a female ELCA bishop wearing rainbow-colored vestments, you know, to celebrate the rise of gay rights in her, you know, denomination or whatever. There's a picture, right? Doesn't that look like something you can take back to the editors and they go, wow, that looks kind of funky?
Absolutely.
At the very least, it looks religious. So I think these are churches that still look like churches, yet they kind of act like journalists. Does that make sense? Or they act the way journalists would want them to act. So all of that is to say, I'm making a case for covering this story. What I'm not doing is making a case for ignoring it, which means, frankly, I'm rather mystified.
Terry Mattingly is our guest when we come back. Maybe the lack of coverage has to do with the fact that the document in question is 150 pages long and written in churchese. We'll talk about that after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of an ecumenical agreement between the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and Roman Catholic leaders. Is part of the explanation, Terry, for the lack of coverage, one, that it raises questions that journalists really aren't equipped to answer, and two, that the document in question here is 150 pages long and is mostly a catalog, a boring catalog of previous ecumenical meetings between the two?
Yeah, sum that up in 600 words. Yeah. Now, I have a lot of sympathy for the reporter who I would pretty guarantee that whoever was assigned to write this story didn't want to do it in 400 words. At the same time, I took the initiative of reading the section of the document about mutual recognition of each other's clergy, because that's a really, really critical issue anytime you're talking about ecumenical affairs or interchurch affairs. So I don't think there was a single quotable phrase in like the 20 pages I read. There was nothing there that didn't reek of kind of this academic, nuanced, high-mindedness that almost seemed like it was written intentionally to avoid being quoted, which says to me that I don't know how much progress they actually made. I mean, in my post at Get Religion, I noted that the primary person quoted in this article is a female evangelical Lutheran church bishop. Well, what does the document say about the Roman Catholic Church's view of her ministry and clerical authority? Not to mention, you know, the ELCA has an openly gay, non-celibate bishop, etc. Well, you know that under Catholic doctrine, they can't think too highly of that. So when you read the 20 pages, and I have to admit at the end of it, I don't know what those pages said. They seem to be saying, we've got to go beyond kind of literal agreement on what a priest looks like or who a priest is, but we know that in the eschaton of God's all-prevailing providence, we all somehow share in his universal priesthood. Okay, put that in a headline. That wasn't a direct quote. I was making it up, but I guarantee you that's the style of what I was reading. Okay? What's a reporter supposed to do with that? I really don't know, but folks, if you can't agree on what a priest is or what a pastor is, what are the issues that flow right out of that subject? Like, what's Holy Communion? When is a Mass not a Mass? Do we agree on the substance of the elements used in Holy Communion? Or a priest is a priest implies that a bishop is a bishop. What does ordination mean? Is a Lutheran bishop the same thing as a Catholic bishop in terms of where they fit into the hierarchy of the Christian faith and church history? And folks, if you don't agree on who your bishops are, or what a bishop is, or apostolic succession, you just said, we don't even agree on what it means to be a church. So if that is the case, we're back to that statement, you know, that in the lead of this story, that they have released a declaration recognizing there are no longer church-dividing issues on many points with the Roman Catholic Church. I'm confused, and maybe the fact that I'm confused is why this only got a 400-word story, you know, on one wire service, and I'm still looking to see if there's any other coverage.
With only about 30 seconds here, Terry, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, which is significant to Lutherans, if no one else, is coming up this next year. Do you imagine there might be an incentive to follow up and answer some of those very thorny, pesky questions?
Well, it could be, but if that was the case, and I had any pull with the Missouri Synod Lutherans, I would tell their press office to contact these people and several others that say, at the very least, you need a story about the fact that the Lutherans don't agree with the Lutherans about who the Lutherans are. I mean, let's at least get that straight before we start trying to say that, by the way, we're kind of getting over that whole Reformation thing and we all love each other and think it's fine.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to do it.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the Old Testament judge and prophet Samuel. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest. Folks, you have seen the images of this absolute devastation of the flooding in Louisiana and Mississippi. You can help support the flooding victims by making a tax-deductible gift to LCMS Disaster Response. Just go to lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster. And you can earmark a donation for the victims of the flooding in Louisiana and Mississippi. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among His people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.